everyone, to Season 2 of IDEA, the podcast about improving data engagement and advocacy. We are your hosts, Brianna Wham.
And Shannon Sheridan.
With the movement towards open science and the increasing requirements for data management and sharing, the demand for robust data management skills is growing. Because of this, the need for training that meets researchers where they are has never been more crucial.
In today's episode, we have the pleasure of speaking with data stewards from the University of Vienna, who've created a training program with courses catering to PhD students, technical staff, and specific disciplines. The training covers general data management and specific topics such as support for particular infrastructure. And not only are they offering this training to their community, but they have taken active steps to assess the effectiveness of their training program and create open educational resources.
So, without further ado, let's warmly welcome our fantastic guests to learn more about their training program and their experience engaging researchers with data. So, let's get started. Could you all introduce yourself and tell us a little bit more about your roles and how they fit into the research data management ecosystem at the University of Vienna?
So I can start. My name's Emily Kate. I'm the data steward for the Faculty of Life Sciences here at the University of Vienna. Prior to being a data steward, I have a background in anthropology and archaeology. So at the University of Vienna, we have a centralized research data management team that includes, you know, individuals from a lot of different divisions here at the university, a lot of different parts of research services. And that team has been around for maybe 15 or 20 years in some form or another, and it's, you know, continued to grow over the years. And the data stewards are essentially the newest addition to that, you know, already awesome group of people. Currently, our team consists of 5 people. So there are 4 data stewards and 1 data steward coordinator. We're all embedded with our faculties that we serve. And ultimately, the University of Vienna has been around since about 1365, I think. So we're very old, we're very large, and we're really a complex structure. But within that structure, you know, there's a lot of support and services for researchers and for students. But the trick is about knowing where to go for help. So ultimately, as data stewards, we serve our faculties. You know, we provide information and education about good research data management practices, listen to researcher needs to help guide things like infrastructure development here at the university. We also engage with initiatives outside our own institution, you know, to keep up to date on what's happening in the world of research data management and research services. But kind of at the end of the day, for our researchers, we're sort of like pathfinders. So they tell us what their support needs are. And then we do our best to kind of isolate the resources and solutions that alleviate their research data management focused problems and the things that might be, you know, roadblocks to their work.
So I'm Monika Bergmann. I'm one of the 4 data stewards. I'm responsible for the Faculty of Philological and Cultural Studies, which has 14 departments in the fields of, let's say, literature, linguistics, musicology, and area studies. I was the first one. I've been here since June 2022. My background is in German studies and library and information science, and I also study urban and regional development. So I'm interested in a lot of things, which helps at a faculty like mine, which is the largest faculty at the University of Vienna.
My name is Michael Fechtinger. I am also a data steward. I'm located at the Center for Microbiology and Environmental System Science. I'm now in this position also for a bit more than 1 year, but I'm at the University of Vienna for already quite some time. So I'm here at the university for over 10 years now, started here as a student. I have a background in biochemistry, but also in philosophy.
The next question we have for you all is, can you tell us a little bit about the data management training program that you all run at the University of Vienna? What did you do? How did you do it? Including what's your approach for just determining course quotas and staffing requirements? And why did you do it?
Yeah, so before we started the whole data steward program, there was already established a certain research data management training infrastructure at the university that was mainly carried out by people located at the central services, so at the computer center or at the library. So that was what we were facing, was a very generic RDM training that was offered to all researchers. also one that was offered to all PhD students from all the different disciplines. So what we encountered when we came here was that the first problem was that people were not aware of these training programs. So the advertising and the information about that was not really visible to them. And the other thing was that it was, as I already said, very generic. So what we set up then in our capacities as now a pilot project of 4 data stewards, we decided that we want to have discipline-specific training courses for our PhD students. Why the PhD students? It was, I think I would say it was a pragmatic approach, because there is a huge load of course of bachelor and master students who would also need that kind of training, but at the moment we are not really able to serve them. And at our faculties, people said, okay, it might be a good idea to target the PhD students, because we have already an established infrastructure for them, a training infrastructure, which is at the University of Vienna, which are also doctoral schools, at least at some faculties and centers we have that. And that's kind of where we integrated in and where we used that already existing infrastructure and set up our training course, for example, for the life sciences.
Thing I would add is that, as Mikhail said, the working with PhD students was a pragmatic choice, reaching the people that we could in the most effective way that we could. But we also find, A, that they're a lot of fun to work with. And then second, they're really excellent vectors for spreading ideas, because they come to the course and they're happy to be there and they're happy to listen. And then they go back to their home labs and they say, you know, well, could we do this differently? Could we try this? The data steward said that we should do this differently, or that this isn't so great that we do this. And so our hope is that they're actually kind of spreading all of these ideas to other people who maybe, you know, aren't so inclined to come to a workshop or something like that.
I agree with Emily that this is one of the nicest target groups, because they're really happy to be supported. And it's really fun to work with them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'm just curious, what year in their PhD typically, or is it range, are you reaching them?
So right now it's sort of free will sign up. So we just advertise every time we run the course in life sciences, at least. And they just sign up because they want to, or because someone is telling them they need to. So they could be at any stage in their PhD when they come to us. There have been some discussions in a few of the departments as in life sciences, and I believe also in Mikhail's center, about beginning to bring these RDM workshops and these RDM requirements into their PhD education formally in a structured way. And I think in those cases, you know, we would be getting them very early on.
So in working with them, you know, the audience for our podcast tend to be other practitioners. So we are always interested in what the actual building process of a program like this looked like. So could you explain a little bit about your process for building up the training program, you know, what it looked like, and especially how you transform those materials into those open educational resources? We'll be able to link to some of those in the show notes for you.
So the course is kind of separated into two parts. The students should complete an online module in advance that is written in LearScript. And afterwards, they should come to an in-person workshop where we will mainly engage with them, discuss problems, and also have exercises where they can apply the knowledge from the online course. We started first with online part. We wrote it quite collaboratively, just decided on a structure and wrote that down. And then we drafted the person sessions. And in there, we thought it was quite good to just have discussions and the very broad range of activities that we can do with the students, which keeps them engaged for the 2 days that we keep them there, 3 hours each. So in this very initial phase, I already kind of had the idea that in the end, this should turn out as an open educational resource. So that was a decision in advance, because I think that makes it way easier than if in the end you have to modify. And so I was looking for solutions that offered that. And there I found LearScript, which is a markdown dialect that allows this kind of course structure and that's easy to share and easy to modify for everybody. And yeah. Then time passed by and Emily also started in her position. And then we decided very quickly that we want to do this together, not only for the Center for Microbiology, but also for the Faculty of Life Sciences. And that's, I think, how the process kind of started.
Yeah. So one thing I was going to add, actually about the resources that we create and them being open educational resources and them following the students. So one thing we did want to mention is that one of the beauties of the Aliyah Script course is that it's a pretty dense compilation of information, and we have structured it in such a way it's hosted on GitHub. And so the students actually don't lose access to it after they don't have access to Moodle anymore, after the university, you know, cleans out Moodle and takes away old courses that the students were enrolled in. And so as long as they save that link and we need to tell them to save the link, they can always go back to it and always have that with them and also see it update and grow over time too.
Nice. That's always great. I think people really appreciate having those resources afterwards. It does prompt a question for you, Monica. How does your program differ from the one that Emily and Michael run?
I don't have this flipped classroom approach, speaking from the humanities viewpoint. So we could already build on the existing courses that have very detailed learning scripts and learning goals and everything. And I just increasingly adapt them to the humanities, for example, simply by adding examples from my faculties, from my project. Also, the nice thing is that we are in a pilot phase, so we can try out things without trouble. So if something doesn't work out, we just don't do it anymore. For example, I plan for the next terms to establish some kind of, let's say, collaborative self-learning where people are mentored and accompanied when they do learning together. For example, DMP writing in a group accompanied by a data steward.
One of the things you also mentioned was about pre and post assessment surveys that you're implementing. And I am a big fan of assessment just because you can't improve something if you don't measure it. So could you talk a little bit about some of the insights you may have gathered from those assessment surveys? And if you want to expand it into any advice you might have for people who are interested in measuring their success around their own data management training programs, you know, feel free to extrapolate.
Yeah, I could talk about that. So right now, the PhD student course for life sciences is the only course that does these pre and post assessments. All of the courses that we do have like a feedback component at the end where people can, you know, tell us if they like the course or not, what was good, what was bad, what we should change next time. So we always do that. But this concept of kind of tracking their learning is just appearing in the life sciences course for the first time. And I think, honestly, it works best with the PhD students because they're more flexible. They're more willing to kind of play along with you and go ahead and do this thing that you're asking them to do. And so I think that helps a lot. Two things we wanted to measure were the student comfort with concepts and then their actual knowledge. And so first, we asked them to rate their confidence on implementing some research data management focused concept or topic, or could they explain it to someone else? And then we actually asked them to answer a few short answer questions about their knowledge. So we avoid the situation where we have someone who says, yes, you know, I know everything about this and I could teach it to others. And then they come to actually being asked to do it. And, you know, they don't know everything that they think they do. And so we're looking at those two things. And I mean, first and foremost, I guess what we're finding out is that they're learning, which is awesome. That's the goal. But their confidence is increasing too, which we think is really great. So when they come to the course, they usually aren't able to clearly answer the knowledge questions that we ask them in that pre-survey. And then by the end, we find that most of the students can confidently answer most of the questions that we've given them, again, in that short answer format. Confidence also tends to move from a place of, you know, I have no idea what this concept is. I have no idea what this means. Or I've heard of it, but I have no idea what to do with it, to either, you know, I understand this and I can do it myself now, or I understand this and I know where to go for help when the time comes for me to implement it. And I think we're pretty happy with that series of events. That seems pretty good to us.
That's huge, even if they can just say, I know where to go, because I think, Michael, you touched on this at the very beginning, is one of the hardest things is making sure people are aware that they can get help with data management. And that's a real challenge, I know, here at a large research institution similar to your own.
Yeah, and maybe to add on that, it's not just that they don't know that somebody is there, because, for example, they know that I was there as a data steward, but what we really see is that students that attend our course then also tend to contact us afterwards again, because then they have the confidence that they know, okay, what belongs to research data management, what can a data steward really offer? They know, of course, know us. Also, this personal component is pretty important, and this is also, I think, one part of our pilot where we belong to the faculties or to the research centers. So we are not somebody from some central service at the university, but they have this kind of a personal component where we belong to them. So I think this is also something we see, that the students that are at the course kind of engage with us way more often afterwards as well, and then come with specific problems where we could help them.
Yeah, and I think something else that's really important. I mean, we tell all of the researchers that we serve this, we tell them that we're a judgment-free zone. So no matter how big the mess is, no matter how big or small your question is, you know, please just come to us and ask, and we'll do everything we can to help you. And we're not judging you. And that's something I think we really try to impart also to the PhD students, particularly that we are a trusted person who can help them with these sorts of things, who sits outside of the rest of the structures that they exist in. So they can come to us and ask us questions that, you know, maybe they feel like they should already know the answer to.
And I'm also curious, have you received any feedback on that flipped instruction approach from these students? It sounded like, Monica, you're considering moving that direction. So are you guys getting positive feedback from that?
I think overall, they seem to really like it. I can only think of one instance where someone, you know, felt that the online module was too much reading and they thought it needed to be a lot shorter. Most of them seem to really like having the module. We try to make it funny and colorful and fun for them to read through, but they like having it and knowing that they have it after the course. I mean, they do seem to appreciate, you know, not coming to us for 6 hours and listening to 6 hours of lecture. They seem to really like doing all the activities and things like that. It keeps them more engaged and it's hopefully less boring. They wouldn't have known a course from us that wasn't that. So I'm not sure, you know, they don't really draw the parallels, but they seem to enjoy it and seem to have fun.
That's helpful to hear. It's always interesting to consider kind of how could we be changing how we're doing instruction, making it more interesting and actually kind of hands-on. Because I think I really liked that they can actually come out of your course with something, like they'll have done these data management strategies or applied it to their own work.
Yeah. And I think something that Mikhail and I both experienced when we teach the course, some of the activities we have, you know, we sit down and we look at them on paper and we think, oh my goodness, this is so silly. They're going to hate this. They're going to think this is so stupid and childish and they're not going to want to do it. But we forge ahead and, you know, the time comes in the classroom for them to do it. And lo and behold, they actually seem to be, you know, having a lot of fun and are talking with each other about it and laughing about it. So that has been something that's been a really pleasant surprise, you know, not being afraid to be sort of silly with them and them responding really well to that.
Can you give an example of what like one of those activities might be? Because I think that's another challenge. Sometimes, like you described, it can come across as boring. So how you're making those activities fun for the students?
Yeah. So I guess one of the first ones we do with them is the research data lifecycle. So the circle of all the different steps that you can find everywhere online. And they've read about it in the module. And then we give them placards that are brightly colored and have silly sayings on them along with the steps. And we give them some sticky tack that you use to hang things on the wall that's removable. And we put them in groups and we tell them to just go plot out the life of a piece of data or a research project on the wall. You know, arrange all of this in a shape that makes sense to you. We give them blank placards that they can add steps to the cycle that they think are missing. And I think that's one of the first activities they do in their little groups that they stay in for the duration of the workshop. And it really gets them talking to each other and they seem to really enjoy it.
I love that. That sounds like a lot of fun. And I bet you never get the same process twice that they're sticking up on the wall, do you?
They often come up with very, very funny solutions to it and also the extra steps. And another activity that, according to the feedback, they enjoy very much is where we hand out kind of research projects to them that are basically, in principle, just adopted research projects from our faculties. And they should kind of think about how they would organize the data within that. So develop a folder structure, a file naming scheme. And this is something that a lot of them seem to really enjoy and can then immediately apply also to the actual research instead of just getting a list of rules of what you should do. And they also encounter that it's, even if in the small groups of four or five people they're in the course, it's very hard to agree on one common structure. And in research groups, they're usually, over 10 people. So they already see there that it's not that easy.
We've also seen in your Research Data Alliance presentation at the last plenary that you've also worked on a data steward certificate course. Could you tell us a bit more about that? What prompted you to create it, who its audience is, and what you hope researchers and research support take away from that course?
So Michael and I have already attended the course because one part of our job is attending this course, and our coordinator, Teresa Kalova, designed the course and organized it. The need for something like that was quite obvious. There was kind of a predecessor course that also at the University of Vienna, which was called Data Librarian course, but it had a much more focused target group, mainly really library staff. It was a bit narrow because data stewards are often librarians, but not always. And so we wanted to broaden the target group. And so the audience is mainly researchers and PhD students on the one hand and research support staff on the other hand. This is, for example, repository managers, librarians, IT staff. And what is also important to know about our course is that it focuses on research data management in contrast to data stewardship within companies. There's another course in Austria offered for people interested in this, but ours is really focused on research data management. We have people from about, I think, 12 nations taking part in the course, which is really great. And many of them already work in some position in research data management, but we hope that they get profound knowledge to develop new services in their organizations. They should learn to assess the needs and offer support that is tailored to those needs and work together with researchers and software developers and other stuff, and also design new workflows and simply fulfill the role of a data steward in a research institution.
That sounds like a really cool program, and quite frankly, one that even I feel like I could still learn some stuff from it. So I was very interested to hear about it.
I was thinking the same thing, Shannon, and that kind of statement of like, coming from a research background and then coming into this field, like you know things from your field, but having that overarching principles behind that work is really helpful. And also experience of, like you said, assessing needs and bringing that forward into actual trainings. Sounds like a really, really great curriculum.
Yeah, for me, I'm also coming from a research background and doing that course and getting into this role as a data steward. It was quite nice to have this course and then always being able to immediately apply the knowledge I acquired there than to my day-to-day work.
I benefited a lot of the discussions in the course because I have a librarian point of view on data management. And so it was really nice to have researchers in my group because the questions that they asked, well, I knew, okay, these are questions that also the people I support will ask.
Yeah. And I would say too, something that's really nice about the course that it kind of provides data stewards with some legitimacy and, you know, gives them some professional credentials. And I think the connection between librarian and data steward is maybe a little bit easier for people to make at times between the person who was a researcher and is now a data steward. I think sometimes people don't quite know what to do with us or what to think. And so I think, you know, taking the course also helping build your community and then also having those credentials is really helpful just on a professional level.
I like that, right? Because there's no full-on degree for just data steward yet. So maybe your program is the first step in that though. Okay, and then that brings us to our last question. What would other institutions need to adopt your strategies at their own place of work? You know, either the training program or the certificate course, you know, what do you think are key factors for success there?
So if other institutions want to provide a similar course to ours, they just can reach out to us and maybe we can collaborate on that. So there's no need to copy it one-on-one, but you just really can work with together with my colleagues and we could provide it as a collaboration.
Yeah, and I think I was at a conference this summer and someone was asking about, you know, I'm just one person at my institution. How do I fix X, Y, and Z problem in research data management at my institution? And the reality is that sometimes, you know, we don't have the capacity or the resources to do everything that we want to do. But the response to that question from the panelists was, you know, the best thing to do is to do something. And you can, you know, paralyze yourself sort of with wanting to always do the absolute best thing, letting perfection be the enemy of the good. But ultimately, you know, if you can just do one course, it's one more course than you had before. And that's awesome. Or if you just talk to five people, that's five more people than you had talked to when you got out of bed in the morning. And that's awesome as well. So I think that's always something really important to kind of keep in focus, like just one step at a time, one day at a time, one person at a time.
For our listeners, we're all nodding here vigorously and giving thumbs up to that sentiment.
Thank you all so much for telling us a bit about the data management training program you all have implemented at the University of Vienna, as well as the data steward certificate course. I know I personally feel like there's a lot of ideas and approaches that I want to apply here at my institution, and I'm sure our listeners will feel the same. And so again, we will be putting links to content and examples in the show notes. And so for our listeners, feel free to take a look. And with that, I just want to take a moment to thank all three of you again for joining us here on IDEA.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, all. Have a good one.
Thanks for joining us, folks. We hope you enjoyed this episode of IDEA.
You can find the resources from today's show in the show notes.
Our theme music is by Scott Holmes. And a big thanks to the Research Data Alliance Interest Group, Engaging Researchers with Data, for supporting our work.
If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to rate or review us wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next time.